So if you've got a Bible, find your way to Matthew chapter 1. Matthew, if you don't have a Bible, feel free to grab one on the side. Look it up on your phone or a screen. But Matthew chapter 1, Matthew's the first book of the New Testament. We're going to start in verse 1. There's a lot of different ways to step into this season of Advent. And again, as you heard earlier, Advent is just a term that means arrival, the arrival of God in the flesh, of God becoming human, of Jesus being born. So arrival, and followers of Jesus, the church has done this for centuries, and both celebrated a season of Advent and lit candles. You heard Edwin share a little bit of his story this past year and light this candle, that we'll light a candle each of these 4 weeks, these four candles up here, and then we'll light one on Christmas Eve, the Christ candle, as we're gathered here for Christmas Eve. And then so Advent is simply a term that points to the birth of Jesus, the arrival of Jesus. And maybe you've already set up in our home. We did a Christmas tree the day after Thanksgiving, and then we decorated over the last couple of days, and we've set up a nativity scene where it's got a manger and Mary and Joseph, and then what looks like a very, honestly, Midwestern barn, and shepherds and wise men and angels and animals and the whole deal, and it captures this scene of Jesus being born, the nativity scene. Maybe you putting up one in your front yard, and we're so grateful to those of you that do, and maybe you've got an ornament that you hang that has it, or we see this scene over and over and over again. And one way to go through Advent is to focus in on the details of the scene or the themes that come out of it: joy, peace, hope, and love, or the different characters: shepherd, angels, magi, animals. I don't know all of the different details of that scene. We're going to do something different this year. We're actually going to back way up from that particular scene. The book of Matthew starts with this really odd few verses. And I say odd because some of you have never actually read all the way through. You've started, and then you've realized as you're reading the first few verses of Matthew, oh, these are the ones that you're supposed to skip. And then you skip to verse 18, and you're like, oh, okay, here, Jesus is born. We're going to do something that might seem very weird. We're actually going to look at a list of names known as a genealogy for 4 weeks. It's going to be awesome. I promise it's going to be great. There are going to be things in there that you never noticed before because you didn't read it, or you've never even heard of it, or didn't know it was there, or just go, I'm just going to read John again because it's awesome. And Matthew is, wow, how do you get through those first 17 verses? There's so much in there. And what it does for us is it reminds us, it shows us in a way that we got to do a little work for, but it shows us that the God that loves us, that created everything, has been working faithfully, intentionally, purposefully for so long. And as we see those details and those names and those stories over and over and over again, and all of that's in there, we're reminded more of who God is and what his character's like. And then we find ourselves actually a part of it as well, a story later on. So look at the very first verse of Matthew. Matthew chapter 1, verse 1, it says this. This is the genealogy of Jesus the Messiah, the son of David, the son of Abraham. This is the genealogy of Jesus the Messiah, the promised one of God, Jesus the Messiah. It's an introduction. This is who we're going to be talking about, Jesus the Messiah. He's the son of David. He's not the son. That means he's in the line of David. He's like the great-great-great-great-great-grandson of David. And even more than that, he's the son of Abraham. That's the first verse. And then it's going to go on. There's going to be 17 verses. We're only going to read a couple of them today. But all of these names, some of which we can actually pronounce, many of which we can't. But it's literally just a list of names. Why would it start that way? Here, let me, I'm going to read you something, and you're going to be able to, some of you, not all of you, are going to be able to finish the sentence for me. And I've been through this with two gatherings already, and so just let me encourage you this way. If you know it, just be bold. Just say it out. Don't be shy. Don't whisper it, because it just makes it awkward for me. Here we go. In a time of conflict, a group of unlikely heroes band together on a mission to steal the plans to the... Nice! Way to go! Thank you! The Death Star. I'll read it for you again. In a time of conflict, a group of unlikely heroes band together on a mission to steal the plans to the Death Star. Now, right here in Matthew, no. So there's a movie coming out that some of you know about, and you're excited about it. And again, don't be shy. Some of you are excited about what movie that's coming out in 2.5 weeks? Rogue One. Rogue One comes out in a couple weeks. Do you know when tickets go on sale? Yeah, whatever, you know. When is it? When do tickets go on sale? Tomorrow. Somebody got it, tomorrow. Now, that movie actually comes out before Christmas. I think it comes out the 16th. It comes out the 16th. Tickets go on sale tomorrow. That is unrelated to the talk. I just wanted you to write it down and plan your day tomorrow. Back to Matthew. So here's the deal. Some of you don't care about Rogue One. Others of you are so excited that Rogue One is coming out. Some of you have no idea what it is, and you think I'm kind of a nerd for talking about it this long already. I'm going to talk about it much longer. Rogue One is a Star Wars story. It fits in between before the very first Star Wars that was made, which was A New Hope, which was in 1977. I said 78 in the first gathering, and someone almost threw a chair at me. It's 1977. A New Hope came out. The first three movies that were made were A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi. 77 and then early 80s. That was, movies were like black and white, and there was no sound then. But those three movies, I saw them all in the theater. It was awesome. So a long time ago, these three movies were made. And then it was 20 years almost until the next three were made. The first three in a series of nine films. So the first three, 4, 5, and 6 were made, then 1, 2, and 3. And then number 7 came out, what, last year at this time. And then Rogue One, which is not the 8th movie, and this is very confusing. Please pay close attention. Rogue One takes place in between the 3rd and 4th movie. Okay? And it's kind of a one-off. So some purists are very upset that this is being made. Many people are really excited, and there's all sorts of different kind of projections for if it's going to break sales records for opening weekend in December and all that kind of thing. And some of you actually knew that ticket sales go on sale tomorrow because you're really excited and looking forward to it. Some of you will actually go see this movie, and you don't care about it right now. But you'll go because, you know, a loved one asked you to go, or it's a date, or a spouse wants you to go, or because everybody else is going. Or because some pastor talked about it for like 25 minutes at church. But you'll go, and it'll be good maybe, and you'll enjoy it, but it won't be that transformative, that exciting. Others of you just can't wait. You've already got it planned. You're going to go at midnight. You're going to buy the ticket tomorrow and all this because you know how everything fits together and that they're making a movie in between 3 and 4 is just so awesome to you. And you realize how where it comes, 3 ends and where 4 begins, and to have one in between there and how it links with the greater story and how the Galactic Empire came into being and what it's trying to do and how the Rebel Alliance is fighting against it and how the Klingons are chasing the Hobbits back to Hogwarts and how it all fits together. And you understand the great big story that all of these movies tell. And you can't wait to go see Rogue One because it fits within all of that. Matthew is doing something in the very first page of the scripture in listing all of these names. Is saying that this nativity scene that we set up in our homes and on our front lawns and that we see pictures of and hear songs about for the next number of weeks through Advent season, through Christmas time, is a scene. It's one scene. And as history-altering as it is, as transformative as it is for so many followers of Jesus Christ throughout history, it's one scene. And not knowing the rest of the story doesn't diminish the significance of that scene. But when we know the rest of the story, we actually get to know more of who God is and what he's been doing throughout history, both before Jesus was born and since Jesus was born, in our own lives right now. And this list of names that happens that is hard to pronounce and very boring that we kind of tune out and we just kind of get numb and skip to the scene. Each of these names links to a story and tells us more of how God has actually been working throughout history. And then the guy didn't just wake up and go, oh, I got to send Jesus at this time right here and to help humanity and creation. But it's something that he's been doing much, much longer before. It helps us see the wider story, the bigger story. And it actually makes Jesus' birth that much more exciting, that much more miraculous. It also makes it scandalous. You heard Jason say that earlier. It's actually pretty scandalous because of the names that are in there. And so I want us to look just at a few names today, and then we'll pick it up next week as we continue on. Look at verse 2. It says this. Abraham was the father of Isaac. And if you've got an older version of the Bible, or maybe you've heard this before, the term begat just means fathered, basically, that Abraham begat Isaac, begat, you know. But it says, what I'm going to read, it says, was the father of. Abraham was the father of Isaac. Isaac, the father of Jacob. Jacob, the father of Judah and his brothers. Judah, the father of Phares and Zerah, whose mother was Tamar. Pharez was the father of Hezron. Hezron, the father of Ram. That's an easy one to say. Ram, the father of Abinadab. Abinadab, the father of Nahasan. Nahasan, the father of Salmon. Salmon, the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab. Boaz, the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth. Obed, the father of Jesse, and Jesse, the father of King David. We did it. That's six, 5.5 verses of names that we just read. Wasn't that exciting? Not yet. Okay, fine. Fair enough. Crazy, crazy weird names. It starts with naming David and then Abraham, and then we found this list of all these names. David was the greatest king in the history of Israel. Jesus is named king later. He's better than David, but of the pure, the only human kings, David was the greatest. And David was the last one to hear the promise that through you, David, will come a Messiah. And so that's why David is named. And then, again, it starts with this whole line, starts with a guy named Abraham. And it starts with Abraham because Abraham's actually the first one to hear the promise that God will be working throughout human history. God says to Abraham, I'm here, I'm present with you, and I'm going to be working. And what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be blessing all people through you. The reason that Abraham is the beginning and the reason that God says I'm going to bless all people through you is because humanity had got themselves in trouble the chapter before. Abraham, the promise to Abraham happens in Genesis chapter 12. In Genesis chapter 11, we have this story that if you were here a number of weeks ago through our fall series, Pastor Jason Simmons taught through the story of the Tower of Babel, which happens in Genesis chapter 11. Humanity, created by God, created in his image and created good. Adam and Eve have been ejected from the garden and a bunch of people are born and humanity grows. And then we come to the plains of the Middle East and all the people are gathered there. And they use their technology, their most advanced technology at the time, to begin building a tower. And their idea was, we're gonna build up and get to God. We don't busy ourselves with building towers as much, but we all do this in some form, even today, that we want to make ourselves into gods in some way. And at that time, their way was to build a tower. And they thought, if we build a tower high enough to get to God, then we'll be equal to God. We won't have to look up to him anymore. He won't be different or above us. We can actually reject him being our authority above us, and we can even, in doing that, reject his love as well. God steps in, and what he does is he changes their languages, so they begin speaking different languages, and they don't all speak the same language anymore. And so they speak the same language, they can't understand, they certainly can't work together and build together anymore, and so they separate and they begin populating different parts of the earth. God stopped their behavior, their rebellion. And in the very next chapter, God says, I'm going to begin helping you now. I'm going to begin healing you. I'm going to begin restoring you. And it's going to start with you, Abraham. And he starts with Abraham, and he makes this promise to Abraham. Abraham's an old guy, and he says, even though you're old, I'm going to make you a great people. I'm going to make you have many, many children. And it's through your children, it's through you, your line, your family, your genealogy, that I'm going to create a people that I'm going to work through. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to bless all peoples through you. That's the promise to Abraham. Jesus is the culmination of that. Jesus is the fulfillment of that promise. And it's through Jesus that God blesses all of humanity. An invitation to say, come and be with me. Be transformed by me. Trust me. And so as it goes through Abraham and then all these different names. And again, today, this morning, we're ending with David. But what we see through this is that God is writing this story, and that God is faithful, and that God is unchanging, even though he works in surprising ways. That God is working even when we don't see him. And we'll find next week as we look through names that are even more difficult to pronounce, how there's seasons where it doesn't look like God is showing up and working, but yet God is still present and working. And for so many of us, we can point, like Edwin did earlier, like, God, you showed up in this season of my life, but we can find other seasons where, God, where are you? Why aren't you here? Why aren't you answering me? Why can't I hear you? Why aren't you changing my life? Why aren't you improving my situation? Why aren't you helping me? You're certainly not blessing me in it. Where are you? Where are you? Where are you? And what we have in this list of names is a lot of people who ask that question at times. And God reveals that he was faithful through all of it, working out his plan. God is at work even when we can't see him. He's intentional. He's purposeful. He's faithful. The other thing that jumps out just at these first few verses is not just names that are difficult to pronounce, but names that don't even belong in here. A genealogy was a way to say, this is who I am. We do it this way with profiles, with online profiles, and we also do it with CVs or resumes, that we want to make a good impression, and so we say, this is who I am. A genealogy for Jesus would have said this, it would have validated who Jesus is. It would have said he belongs to this people, the people of Israel, and it would have given details about the kind of person he's going to be and the promise of being the Messiah. What happens is this genealogy is corrupted. There's names in here that don't belong in there. It's women's names. You just, at this time, you didn't put women's names in a genealogy. It was just for the men. Very different than our time now, right? We can't imagine talking about a daughter or a son without talking about both parents, a mother and a father. But here in Jesus, in the genealogy that comes up to Jesus, it should have been just men at the time. And yet we find women's names in there. And if you're going to put women's names in a genealogy leading to Jesus and that looks back over the Old Testament, you'd think you'd put in the matriarchs, the women that are celebrated, the women that are in the house of Israel, the people of God. You'd put names like Sarah and Rebecca and Leah and Rachel. You'd put those names in because God was clearly there and they were faithful and they were following God. God worked through them. If you're leading up to the person of Mary, who's going to give birth, this miraculous birth to Jesus, you'd look at other supernatural births, right? Like Sarah and Rebecca and Rachel. They had supernatural births. They shouldn't have been able to bear children, and yet God showed up and bore them children. But we don't find their names in the genealogy of Jesus in the book of Matthew. What we find is this introduction, this profile of Jesus that includes these names that you wouldn't imagine being in there. Tamar, Rahab, Ruth. I was downloading a bunch of pictures off my kids' phones and, you know, backing it up this weekend. And I'm amazed at how many pictures are unnecessary, right? I mean, how many we have that are just like, oh, delete that, or okay, that's going to take up more space. And I don't know if you've got, I mean, we probably all have this experience with our own phones, but as I was looking at my kids specifically, it's like, you know, I don't know what percentage, 5% of all their pictures were of like carpet. Like, you just, like, what is it? Is this meaningful to you? Is this an experience, a time of your life? Like, tell me about that. No, I don't know what that was. Okay, and then here there's a bank of 620 pictures of your friend. What happened? Well, he stole my phone and played with it for like 20 minutes. Awesome. It's like virtually the same picture 600 times. Would you like all of these? Would you like how many of these you want? Like, just pick the stuff that you don't need. You just throw out. Imagine if that was your profile picture on your online profile. You'd be like, whoops, that's not me. Let's delete that. Let's get that out. That's not a good representation of me. If you presented a CV or a resume to a potential employer and it was printed, you know, kind of halfway off the page, or if you forgot a whole like degree that you earned that wasn't on there, or if you had like 12 typos in it or something, like, this isn't a good presentation of me. This isn't a good introduction of me. That's what it's like to have Tamar, Rahab, and Ruth in here. Like, you want to edit those out. You want to clean that up. You don't want to include those. Tamar was a woman from another people group. She was a foreigner. She was not an Israelite. A guy named Judah had a son. The first son was his name. I don't know how you say it. It's E-R. Error? I don't know. It wasn't like slang like E-R room. It was literally E-R. And then his second son was Onan. E-R married Tamar because there wasn't another wife around. And so they reached outside the tribe of Israel and brought Tamar in, which they shouldn't have done. She's a foreigner, and then married. And then E-R dies. And then Onan is assigned to be her husband, which is just how things work. You bring somebody into your extended family, even a foreigner. If there's a death or a divorce, the woman has no way to provide for her sustenance, for her daily needs. And so she takes another husband within the family so that she's provided, so she's still cared for. Having a son was a way to find a future. And so Onan was assigned to give her a son, to help her bear a son. And he didn't want to do that. So he did some things to avoid that. And then he died as well. So now she's kind of, you know, this widow that's got, you know, times two. She's lost two husbands. So Judah, the dad, says, hey, you're not really healthy for my family line. And so why don't you just go back to your dad, which never happened, to go back to your father and to your father's village. So she was basically like kind of just rejected and sent back to her village. Later on, Judah is traveling with his posse and his wealth and everything. He's traveling through, and he's going through this city. And it's right after he's lost his wife. So Judah has lost his wife, and he's a widower now. And he's traveling up through this village. And as he comes up to it, he sees outside the city gates a prostitute who's dressed like a prostitute, face was covered. And he does what more than a few men have done, but decides to go to a prostitute. And so he visits her, and he says, "Hey, I don't have what you require for payment." It works. She wanted a goat. I don't know the history behind that. That might be meaningful, but she wanted a goat. And he's like, "Great, I'll give you a goat. I got one back here, but I don't have one on me. And so I'll go get the goat and bring it back, but I need to give you a down payment. And so you trust me, and so I'm going to give you my staff," which was a marker identity of who he was. Everybody knew his staff. And so he gives her the staff, and he goes, "I'm going to go get a goat." He goes back. He doesn't find a goat. He's like, "Ah, she'll be all right with the staff," and forgets about her. She comes pregnant. She gets pregnant. The prostitute does. Turns out it's Thamar. Thamar had tricked Judah. She becomes pregnant, and now she's going to bear a son. She's scandalized because she's not married, and she turns up pregnant in her village. Judah hears about it, and they meet up again, and she says, "Here, tell Judah that this is whose son I'm bearing," and gives the staff back. And Judah's like, uh-oh. Genesis 38, it actually says, Judah says, "She is more righteous than me." He says, "I've failed. I've not been the kind of man I want to be. And she's even better than I am. I didn't take care of her. I didn't provide for her. She tricked me, but she's still better than me." Foreigner, twice widowed, you could say deceiver, tricked Judah, and then bears a child. That child's name is Perez. And Perez is the son of Judah and is in the line of Jesus. And so what we have is this one-time prostitute, twice widowed foreigner that shows up in the line of Jesus. The next female name that shows up is Rahab, who was a prostitute in the city of Jericho. And she was faithful and feared God and hid the Israelite spies, the Hebrew spies, and it was obeyed what God told her to be. She was preserved. She didn't die in Jericho. She became part of the tribe, but she was a foreigner. And then she becomes the mother of Rahab, mother of Obed. And then the next generation, we find Ruth, another foreigner, a Moabite. The Moabites were opposed to the Israelites. They fought. They hated each other. And yet Ruth comes into the family of Israel. What we see at these women's names, they're foreign, they're women, they're not men, but they're included. They're all of questionable character. They do things that are questionable morally. And yet they're highlighted. For somebody to read this list of names, it doesn't show up for us the same today because of we view men and women so differently than they did in the first century. But in the first century, to read these names, it would have been like these lights going off of why are these women included in this list? The reason that they're included in the list is because God promised Abraham that he's going to bless all people. And he starts really early. And Jesus is not pure bread. Jesus is actually multiracial in this sense. He has different blood in him. He has different ethnicities that are in his family line. And what God is saying from the very beginning and throughout his stories, he tells it through these names, through this genealogy, is that I am for all people. I am for all people. And what he's saying is, even to us today, I'm for you. You're included. Regardless of how you identify yourself, how you view yourself, if you think you've been moral or not moral, the decisions that you've made or haven't made, the mistakes that you've made, that you've continued to make, how do you think you're more worthy than somebody else or less worthy than somebody else? If you think one ethnicity is more important than another ethnicity, if you think one kind of job is more important than another kind of job, if you think being married is more important than being not married, if you think your own family is so messed up and if your family origin has caused you so many problems, God says to every single one of us, I'm for you. I love you. I'm blessing you. I'm coming after you. I'm pursuing you. You are valuable. You are loved. I've created you. I want you as my son, as my daughter. There are all these names that come up to tell this story of Jesus. Some of them are hard to pronounce. Some are easy to pronounce. I want to give you two pronouns. The first pronoun is this, you. I'll include me too. You and me. You and me. We are included. We're included in this story. We're invited in. God is saying, I want you to be a part of my family. I want you to be a part of this story. Nothing that we've done disqualifies from God's love, that God consistently pours out his love and his grace for us. The second pronoun I want to leave you with is this: they. They. We've all got our theys, right? I mean, we're all different in who they is. We all have a different definition of that. Some of us had Thanksgiving meal with they. We didn't know it was they, but then we sat down and we started eating and we started talking politics and realized who voted for who, and all of a sudden they became they and not us. We are not on the same page anymore. For some of you, they is a person who drives a car with a license plate from a different state. And I don't mean Washington. You know what I mean? They is people that are invading our city from other states. They're coming here to our precious city. And it's too crowded and it's too expensive and they need to get off our unplanned roads so that we can get to where we need to get to. They are coming here. They have different bumper stickers and different signs in their yards and different signs in their windows. They have different values and different moralities, different ways of understanding how humanity is to get along. They have different agendas. They have different color skin. They have a different socioeconomic level than us. They have a different marital status. They raise their kids differently. They shop at a different place. They work too hard or too little. They are overemployed or underemployed. They are people that are different than us. And what God is saying in this list of names that is so easy to skip over is that he is not only a God for me and for you, but he is a God for all, for them who are different. God is a God for all, that he invites us in to be transformed, to not stay the way we are, but to be healed, to be redeemed, to be changed, to be transformed. That's the God that not only sets up the scene of Jesus being born, but it was at work far before that, setting it up, being faithful, telling his story one generation to the next. I want to invite you to come to these tables that are in front of us now, and we're going to continue to sing. And one of the things that we do during the Sundays of Advent, and we won't do it Christmas Eve, but for the next three Sundays after today, is as we look towards this scene of Jesus being born, of this nativity scene, we also still come to these tables that tell the scene of his crucifixion. And for many of us, that's hard to reconcile, an innocent child being born and an execution on a cross. And it's a reminder to us again that God has a plan that he's working out. And then his way of communicating his love and invitation to us is not just his birth in a manger, but his death on the cross. And so we come to these tables and we take a piece of bread that represents Christ's body broken, and we dip it in the juice representing his blood shed, that communicate to us again his love and his plan to heal the world and to invite us into his family. Jesus, as we come to these tables this morning, would you again remind us of who you are, of your character, that you're faithful, that you've been faithful, that you will continue to be faithful, that you love us, all of us, and you invite us to trust you and to know you, to hear your voice, and to respond to you.